Hello everyone from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, Kol Yom Hadaf. Good afternoon. In Maseches Sanhedrin, and particularly in Perek Chelek, there are numerous references to the story of King Chizkiyahu and versus Sanhedrin. The amazing nace, the amazing miracle that happened with Sanhedrin, the mighty emperor of Ashur, who brings his whole army to Eretz Yisrael and goes to war on Yerushalayim, and his whole army is wiped out in one night, and Sanhedrin runs away, and he's assassinated later on by two sons and succeeded by a third son. What we're going to do today is analyze a couple of things that Chazal say and show how it's evident from the Pesukim, what we can learn from the Pesukim, what we can understand. There are some bunch of unanswered questions here. We will try to sort things out. So let's begin, and we will show also the archaeological background and history around it, so it can help us actually understand much more than we would know just from the text in Tanakh alone. First of all, we're going to start the Gemara in Andav Tzag Dalet. The Gemara Andav Tzag Dalet in Chelek. Gemara Tzag Dalet on the base. Sorry, Tzag Dalet on the Aleph. L'chein yishalach Adon Hashem Tzvokos b'mishman avrozon. My b'mishman avrozon, Hashem will send the fat person to the skinny person. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yavo Chizkiyo, sheyesh lo shmona shemos. Let Chizkiyo come as eight names. V'yiparim v'sancheirim sheyesh lo shmona shemos. And he will punish Sancheirim has eight names. And then the Gemara goes on to list the eight names that Sancheirim has. And it lists, if we'll go by the order of the Gra over here, Pul, Tiglat Pileser with an Aleph, Tiglat Pileser without an Aleph, Tiglat Pilneser with an Aleph, Tiglat Pilneser without an Aleph, Shamaneser, Sargon, Osnapa, Rabba, Viakira, and that totals eight names. And the Gemara seems to be saying that these eight names are all different names belong to Sancheirim. Because the Gemara is very good Sancheirim, Shazachasarib. The Gemara seems to be saying, it implies that all these are one king. Well, I think it's fairly evident that the Tiglat Pileser with an Aleph and without an Aleph, likewise Pilneser with an Aleph and without an Aleph, is all one, and that's those four are definitely one. Pul also seems to be the same as Tiglat Pileser in Assyrian writings, but when we get to King Sargon seems to be a different king, and Sancheirim is the successor to Sargon, and likewise Shalmaneser was also a different king. So the history in this case doesn't seem to match what Chazal seem to be saying here. What is important to mention is that the Gra in Divrei Hayomim on the Pasuk with the Vayar Hashem Asruch Tiglat Pilneser Melech Ashur, so the Gra says, V'adu Amru Chazal, Shmona Shemos Hayulo, that which Chazal say that the Gemara of Yitzhak Dao, that he had eight names, Hainu L'chol Eilu Malchai Ashur, it's a summary, all the kings of Ashur together in total had eight names, Avol Kol Echad Malach B'fnei Atzmo, but the Gra doesn't rule out the possibility that they are different kings. Doesn't have to, as I said, Tiglat Pileser with an Aleph and not an Aleph, Divrei Yomim to Malachim doesn't necessarily have to be a different king. But the Gra doesn't rule out the possibility that we're talking about different people over here, despite the fact that the Gemara seems to be saying otherwise. The Gra says, no, we're talking about the eight names of Assyrian kings total, but it doesn't limit it to make it into one person. So that's a question that's commonly asked. Again, from the history, from the Assyrian records, it does not seem that they were the same, that they were all the same king. Okay, let's go on with the story. Now, the story is in Tanakh in numerous places. It is in the end of, towards the end of Malachim Beis, Perek Yud Ches. It is in Yishayahu, from Perek Lamed Vav to Lamed Tes. Pretty much a repeat with some differences, of course, from what we saw in Melachim. And then there's also a short summary of it in Divrei Hayom. So what do we have? The story is, as the story is in Melachim. Well, first of all, let's start with the Gemara. Daf Samach Amud Aleph. This is going back to the seventh parak. The Gemara talks about a person who is Askaras Hashem. He has to tear begadim, and we learn that from where? From the case of Chizkiyahu. His messengers went to Chizkiyahu's messengers went to the walls to hear what Rav Shoke had to say, and he spoke against the Ribbono Shel Olam. And when they came back, it says, "Vayavol Yochim and Chizkiyahu Asher Labayis v'shev Nasofa v'yoch v'nasu v'maskir v'chizkiyahu." His three officers came back krui begadim. They came back with their begadim torn, and we learn from here that you have to be kareah. A person who wears Askaras Hashem has to be kareah. So Amar Avina Mashmo, Hashemay Askar Mepi Avod Kechavim Enochayv LeKareah. A person who hears blasphemy on the Ribbono Shel Olam from a guy is not chayv to do kriya. Okay, so if so, how come when Rav Shoke spoke against the Ribbono Shel Olam, Chizkiyahu's officers tore their clothing? It's not he's a guy. So the Gemara says Yisrael Mumar Hayim. The Gemara says that Rav Shoke was Yisrael Mumar. He was originally a Yisrael who converted. And therefore, it was a Jew, and therefore they told the begadim. And indeed, in Yerushalmi, we have two opinions. One says he was Yisrael, one says he wasn't. The question is, where does this idea come from that Rav Shoke was a Yisrael Mumar? Where did the Gemara get this idea from? Well, we say they had a Maseres, and no Kasha, but I'm saying, can we actually see this on the Pesukim itself? So in Melachim Beis Yudches, it talks about the story. Let's get a little background. When Chizkiyahu came to power, as it says in Divrei Hayamim, when Chizkiyahu came to power, it says how he did tshuva. He did a 180 degree reverse from the policies of his father Achaz, who almost turned Eretz Yisrael into a place worshiping of the Tsar, becoming an Assyrian country, and he did a major about face. And that's in Divrei Hayom and Beis Chavtes. Hashem Elokei Yisrael Batach Melachim Beis Yudches. V'achrav l'ayar kamayu, he put his trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'yidbak v'Hashem l'osam v'achrav. V'ayah Hashem ima b'chol ha'shei yisei ha'skil. V'yimrod b'melech Ashur v'la avada. He rebelled against Melech Ashur and he refused to submit to the yoke of Melech Ashur thus incurring the wrath of Sancheriv, the king of Ashur. V'abash v'Hashem l'melech Hizkiyahu in the 14th year. Allah Sancheriv Melech Ashur l'ahar Yehuda b'tzuras v'yispasek. He went, Sancheriv came and captured the fortified cities. V'yishlach Hizkiyahu Melech Yehuda el Melech Ashur l'chish ol emar chatosi. So he went to Lachish, and from there, first Chizkiyahu agreed to pay taxes, and he gave him taxes, and in the process he also cut off the gates. The also Hechol Malchashur gave him the gates of the Hechol. It didn't help, which is an interesting question itself. At first, you know, Sanhedrin takes the taxes, and then in the end he comes anyway to Yerushalayim. We'll try to solve that also. Vayishlach Malchashur, he sent to Chizkiyahu Estarton, Vesrav Saris, Vesrav Shakei, Menachish, Shalamel Chizkiyahu, Bechel Kaved Yerushalayim. He sent these three people, Tartan, Rav Saris, and Rav Shakei, from Lachish to Chizkiyahu in Yerushalayim, and they stood Betolas Abrecho Aliona and gave him a whole thing over the head. Who do you think you are that you rebel against the king of Ashur? So that was, the king of Ashur is not willing to settle for taxes anymore. He wants total surrender. He clearly wants total surrender. Now it's too late. If he would have sent the taxes before, it would have been fine. But now it's just too late just to give the taxes. So we have over here three people, Tatan, Rav Saris, and Rav Shakei. These three people, these names, rather, are not the names of the people, but rather their titles. That's an important thing to note. Now, it's not like this guy was called Tartan, this guy was called Rav Saris, and was called Rav Shakei. No, incorrect. These were their titles, and we know this from a few sources. In Assyrian records, the Tartan, who's a high officer, appears in numerous Assyrian records. In the famous Black Obelisk of Shalmaneser, where King Yehu was seen giving tribute to King Shalmaneser, it talks over there about him sending the Tartan. And Rav Saris is also a title which also appears numerous times in Tanakh. If we jump, for example, to Sefer Yirmiyahu, it lists those officers who captured Yerushalayim. And one of them, Rav Saris, is mentioned in the Perek Lamates Gimel Yirmiyahu. This is already Babylonian days. This is clearly an officer. And we have the Tartan also appearing in Sefer Yeshayahu. Just let me find it in a second. Tartan comes in the days of Sargon. Sargon is believed to be the father of Sancheriv. Okay, the father of Sancheriv, it could be the Tartan is the same person who was also an officer in the days of Sancheriv. Doesn't prove anything. But Tartan does appear in numerous Assyrian records throughout the years. It's clearly a title. So Tartan is a title. Rav Saris is a title, which means he's in charge of the Sarisim. And Rav Shakei means that he is a Sar Mashkin. And Rav Shakei also appears in numerous Assyrian records from earlier years also. So these three over here, in order to solve this puzzle, Rav Shakei, Sol Muma, first of all, we have to remember that these three are titles and not names of people. Okay. We have this dialogue that goes on. So he sends the three people, Tartan, Rav Saris, and Rav Shakei, but the one who talks over here is actually Rav Shakei. And Rav Shakei blasts Chizkiyo, and who do you think you are? And you have the nerve to fight. You have the nerve to fight my king. And the officers of Chizkiyo plead with him. Vayomel Yakim el Chizkiyo v'shem lo v'yoch Rav Shakei. Daberno l'avadecha Aramis kishom imanachnu. Talk with us in Aramaic because we understand the language. V'al tedaber imanu Yehudis v'znei Omar she'alachomo. And don't speak to us Yehudis. This is the only time in Tanakh where this story is the only time where the language of Yehudis appears. It doesn't even talk about Ivrit. It's Yehudis. It's a new language. So they go to him, they say, why are you talking Jewish? Speak to us in Aramaic. And Rav Shakei answers, Rav Shakei, in other words, what were they saying? They were basically saying, talk to us, but don't talk to us in a language that everyone else understands. Talk to us in Aramaic, which most of the people don't understand. Aramaic in those days was the international language. So they, of course, as high-ranking officials in Chizkiyahu's court, knew how to speak Aramaic. But most of the population did not. So they told them, why are you speaking Yehudis? Speak Aramaic. We understand what you're saying. We'll get the message. What we'll relate. There's no need for you to speak Yehudis. And his response is, V'yom alem Rav Shakei. Do you think my master sent me to talk to you and your master? No, it's you and Chizkiyahu. No. He sent me to basically demoralize the people who are sitting on the walls that who are going to have to fight, who are going to have to suffer from the famine, from the siege, who are going to have nothing to eat. In other words, he wants me to make sure that everyone hears it. So we have an interesting story over here. This Rav Shakei, He speaks over here Yehudis. He speaks Jewish, which must mean that they're not even Hebrew. It's Jewish, which must mean he clearly knew the language that they spoke in the land of Judah. He was able to speak well enough to yell it out. And it is a local dialect of Hebrew. Today, with media, there's less and less, you know, dialects of different regions because everyone hears, you know, the other people speak. But in those days, it was very common. We know the Gemara talks in numerous places, like in Erevin. Gemara says the Aramaic of Yehuda and the Aramaic of the Galil was totally different. Never mind the Aramaic of Eretz Yisrael versus the Babylonian Aramaic, which we have interesting stories over there in the end of one of the Prakim in the Durham of a guy, a Babylonian and Eretz Yisrael, who married, and he asked his wife for one thing and she brought him a totally different thing, and whatever, I won't go into details of that story there, but Yehudis is a local dialect. And Rashi says in Shayo, the reason why they pleaded with him not to speak Yehudis was they thought that since he was a Yisrael Mumar, since he was originally Jewish, as we have to, what we were talking about this Gemara Sanhedrin, they thought that he would have Rachmanis on his family and he would be okay if he just fulfills the message by relaying it in Aramaic and not everyone has to hear. So he did what his king commanded him to do, but at the same time, you know, he won't offend his family, he'll have Rachmanis. And he responds in a totally reverse and opposite. So, how would Rav Shakeh ever know to speak Yehudis? So again, this is a clear source for the Gemara that Rav Shakeh is from Amoraya. That Rav Shakeh originated in Yehuda, and that's how he spoke Yehudis. Now, we mentioned that there are three people over here. Tartan, Rav Saris, and Rav Shakeh. So it's very interesting. One of the famous Israeli Assyriologists was, of course, by the name of Professor Chaim Tadmor. Passed away a couple of years ago. And he notes, he says, you look at the list of these three people over here, he says, the Saramashkim, he is the lowest of these three people on the totem. Now, the Tartan is above the Rav Saris, and that he clearly proves from certain documentation. And the Rav Shakeh, he's like the lowest. And he says there can be no reason why they send along the Rav Shakeh together with the Tartan and the Rav Saris. It just makes no sense. He says he doesn't know of any parallel where the Rav Shakeh was sent for such a high mission. And it must be that it's interesting is the Gemara over here doesn't quote Rav Shakeh so much. But he does send you to reference, or maybe in the reference it does talk about it. It must be that the only reason why they sent along this Rav Shakeh was because he spoke Yehudis. Had he not spoken Yehudis, he wouldn't have been sent for this important mission over here. There are people more important than him who would go. But since he spoke Yehudis, that's why they sent him. And that would explain the response. That would explain the response. It's all, we want you to speak Aramis. So what is the answer? He says, do you think my master sent me to talk to you and to your king? For that they wouldn't have sent me. If they wanted to give the message to them, someone else would have gone. The Tartan would have sufficed. The Rav Saris would have sufficed. They wouldn't have sent me. If they sent me, it was because they wanted me to speak to the local population. That's why they sent me. So that's how the that's very interesting how it fits out that Chazal Dorish Yisrael Mumar just from the fact that he was able to speak over here the dialect, but that also explains the response that he gave. That was, if they sent me for a reason, and the reason is that I should speak it in Jewish, in Yehudis, in Hebrew, and not in your language. Okay. Let's continue. Okay, the root. We know the amazing story of Sancheriv. We know the amazing story from our Tanakh, and we know from other sources. We know from plenty, numerous Assyrian writings from Sancheriv's palace, which were found in Nineveh. And he talks about the root, and his root, he makes his way from Assyria, which is in northern Iraq today, in the area of Mosul, and cuts across what's today Turkey, into Syria, along the Lebanese coast. First, he has to deal with the king of Tsar. From there, he continues with the cities that belong to the king of Tsar, such as Akko and Kiziv and etc. He makes his way further south, and then when he makes his way further south, he actually does deal with Egyptian with an Egyptian army. Now, as you see from the Pesukim, it's not clear. Did Sancheyev actually make a treaty with the Egyptians, or did the Egyptians come on their own? But Rav Sheke cannot really imagine that Chizkiyahu on his own would rebel against the king of Ashur. So he basically, you know, covers both sides in his speech, and he tells him, and Melachim Beis Yudches, you relied on this weak reed. All it is a reed. It's so easy to crush. And if you're going to say no, we didn't put our faith in the Egyptians, we put our faith in the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's also not going to work, he says. But anyway, it's not clear if he did make a treaty, if Chizkiyahu made a treaty with the Egyptians or not. We don't know, we can't know from the Pesukim. Either way, Rav Sheke covers both ends. In the end of the story, though, when he goes back to Lachish, Vayoshev Rav Sheke, we're in Beis Yutes Pasuk Ches, Vayimtza Asmel Chashur Nelcham Alivna Ki Nasa Melachish. He found him going to war against the city of Livna because he heard that he left Lachish. He heard that Tirhaka, the king of Cush, Nubia, which is south of Egypt, he went to war against you. Now Tirhaka is a known king from Nubia, and at that time the Nubians controlled Egypt. That's a pretty rare thing in Egyptian history, but there was a dynasty from the Nubians that controlled Egypt at the time, and Tirhaka in essence was Melech Mitzrayim and Melech Kush at the same time. So he went to war against Tirhaka, he defeated him. Now this is also documented in the Assyrian writings. From there he headed, we mentioned that he made his way down to Akko, then he mentions a couple cities in the area of Bnei Brak, including Bnei Brak and Azur and Beit Agon, all of the areas which today still carry those same names. And then he talks about a place called El Tekeh, which is also mentioned in Tanakh, but not in reference to this battle, that's where he went to war against the king of Egypt and defeated him, and that's when he turned to go on to Yerushalayim, and that's when this tremendous miracle took place, and the army of Sancheyriv was assassinated. Hashem told him, Loiva Melchashur, he will not come to the city, Loika Menamoga, and he won't assault it. And that night, his whole army was wiped out. I shouldn't say his whole army. His army, 185,000, were wiped out. And Vayisa Vayelech, Vayoshim Sancheyriv Melchashur, Vayeshim Beninveh. Sancheyriv went and settled in Ninveh and was assassinated by his two sons. Then we have another story, which, as Rashi already points out in numerous places, is no doubt an integral part of the first half of the story, the defeat of Sancheriv, and then Bayomim Maim Chola Chizkiyahu Lamus. Chizkiyahu became deathly ill. Vayavarlav Yishayahu Banamatanavi, Yishayahu came to him and told him, you're going to die, and that's the whole Gemara and Brachos, which we're not going to now. And Chizkiyahu davens, and Hashem accepts his tefillah, and Hashem tells him, I will give you, V'saftel Yemecho Chameshes Hashanah, I will add 15 years to your life. And I will rescue you or save you from the hands of Melech Ashur. So we see that the story took place before the defeat of Melech Ashur. Okay, so Chizkiyahu asked for an oath, and the oath is that the sun turned back 10 malos, 10 degrees, and that was the next, and everyone knew they was healed. But Esahi, and the end of the story is, Shalach Barodach Baladan ben Baladan Melech Bavel Sfar Minchal Chizkiyahu. Merodach Baladan, the king of Babel, sends a present and svarim to greet Chizkiyahu because he heard that Chizkiyahu was sick and obviously cured. And how did he hear? Of course, by means of this miracle. Vayishma aleihem Chizkiyahu, vayarei maskol beis nechoso. He showed all his treasures. Vas hakesef, vas hazov, vas habsama, vas shem anatov. Lo yadav shelo rehem chizkiyo beveis v'chol hamshalto. There was nothing over there that Chizkiyo did not show. Vayevo Yishayo anavi al hamelech. Yishayo came to Chizkiyo v'yom alav ma amu anashim ha'ele u'ma'ayim yivu v'lecho. What did these people say? And where did they come from? V'yom chizkiyo ma'etz v'chol kobo mibobo. They came from Babel. The Chazal say already these are one of four people who Hashem tested, and they failed because he should have told them. If you knew already they came, so you're a Navi, so you already know the answer. So what are you asking? This seemingly innocent thing that Chizkiyo shows the messengers of Melech Babel, he shows them his treasuries. Listen to the response. Hine yom boim. Days will come when Isa kol Hashem beveisecho, v'asher otzra v'secho do yom hazeh bavela, lo yivaseh davar ma'ashem. Hashem said, everything that they saw in your treasury, everything will make its way to the Babylonian treasuries. O'im v'necho sh'atel idei, ashe yitzim necho sh'atel idei kocho v'yisuris v'mecho malach bavel. And his response is, v'yom ha'chizkiyo l'shayo, tov dvar Hashem ha'shadibarta, v'yom ha'lam shalom v'yom ha'siyem v'yamai. And Chizkiyo says, oh, that's a good besura. It's wonderful what you just said. Halam shalom v'emes yeh b'yomai. You just said my sons will suffer, but in my days everything will be good and fine. So first of all, we have to understand what was so bad that warranted such a terrible punishment. And the second thing is what his response was. So the response will say first. The Malbim says, "Rishon rishon lachon achon," but. We'll say the Malbim first, says Rishon. I answer the next is later. Okay. The Malbim says, because we have a cloud, that a nevuah for Dabar Tov will never be reversed. But a nevuah for a bad thing can be reversed. So Chizkiyo gets his bad besurah. He says, this terrible decree that his sons will suffer. He says, but what does that mean? It means, in my days it'll be okay. So that's in the bank already. That Hashem promised me that it's going to be okay. What's going to bring my sons? They can daven, they can do tshuva. Chizkiyo, the Maaseh, was afraid that in his days the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. And there are numerous psukim that show that indeed that was supposed to be the case. Had Chizkiyo not davened, and Yirmiyahu, we see this, I think, Perek Vav, had Chizkiyo not davened, the Beis HaMikdash would have been destroyed in his days. So here Hashem tells him, no, in your days everything will be okay. So that's already in the bank. What's going to be afterwards, you know, okay, you know, maybe we'll be able to stop that. But the question is, what is so terrible about what Chizkiyo did? If we look in Divrei HaYomim, So first of all, Perek Beis, Diriam Beis, Perek Lamed Beis. So after, it's a very interesting story over here. After Chizkiyo was rescued from Sancheriv, for Rabin Leviim Minchal Hashem Yerushalayim Mekdonos of Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda. A lot of countries probably were greeted Chizkiyo, gave him presents and brought Kabbonos to Hashem. Vaynase Leinichol Agoy Machrechein. And in the eyes of all the goyim, they respected him because of this big miracle that happened. Then it goes on, Vayamim Ra'im Chola Chizkiyo Ad Lamus. Then it tells the story that Chizkiyo got sick, Vayispal Hashem, Vayom Elo Umof, it's now so long, it's all brief, and Hashem gave a miracle. Velo Chigmul Allah Vashivi Chizkiyo Ki Gavali Bo. And Chizkiyo did not pay Hashem, in, so to speak, in proper, because Ki Gavali Bo Vayel of Ketzev Al Yudah Val Yushalayim. And there was anger, on Yehudim Yerushalayim, Vayikone Chizkiyo Begov Alibu Hu Vayosh Yerushalayim, and Chizkiyahu was Nichna, surrendered Begov Alibu Hu Vayosh Yerushalayim. So we have an interesting thing. All bunch of nations are sending presents to Chizkiyo and respected him. But over here, suddenly, V'lokin Mula Lava Shivi Chizkiyo, after he got sick and was healed, Hashem, he did not pay him, repay the Ribbono Shel Olam the way he should have, and Kigav Alibo, and it's clearly alluding to the story that we mentioned before of Merodach Balad and Ben Maladan. It's clearly referring that he didn't, you know, that he let the he let he let the messengers from Merodach Baladon into his treasury, and he showed him everything. So why, first of all, why particularly, we can ask another question. Why the two things? That was, why didn't Merodach Baladon send presents to Chizkiyahu for the victory over Sancheirib? Why is the way he treated them different and therefore warranting a punishment? So in order to know that, what's important is to read the history of Sancheirib Melech Ashur. And Sancheirib's history appears in numerous prisms and winged bulls, which come from his palace in Nineveh. And it talks about it talks about the history of his life. And his first campaign in the first year was against Babel. Now, the Assyrians had a lot of trouble. They captured Babel numerous times together with Elam, which is a neighboring country, and they're always fighting them, and the Babylonians are always rebelling against them. And he captured the country. And who is the king of that country? None other, of course, than Merodach Baladan ben Baladan. He is the king of that country. Now, his campaign against Chizkiyahu is, if I remember correctly, in the 5th, 6th year. I'm sorry, I didn't bring the records. In the 5th, 6th year, I think it's his 5th campaign, that's when he goes on a campaign against Chizkiyahu. His next campaign, now, it's true, it says in Tanakh that Sancheirib was assassinated. And he definitely was assassinated. And it not only appears in Tanakh, the Yehuda by Likra, it appears in Assyrian records. His son Issachar Chadon talks about it. It's known that he was assassinated. But the Tanakh does not tell us when he was assassinated. And he was assassinated probably even after Chizkiyahu died. He outlived Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu lived 15 years. I think he lived even longer. Why? Just remind you to deal with this issue. So why is that tied into the story over here? But he was assassinated much later. In the meantime, Sancheirib goes back by Yeshiv Beninveh. Maybe that's the point. Vayisa, Vayelech, Vayeshiv Beninveh. He's still running around. It wasn't his entire army that was wiped out. 185,000 dead, but he still had plenty left, as we shall see. And his next campaign, he went to Nineveh. His next campaign was once again against Merodach Baladan, who had run away the first time. That was his next campaign. So what we want to suggest here, and it's probably true, is that Merodach Baladan, of course, was a bitter enemy of Sancheirib. And he would have loved to greet Chizkiyahu after his victory over Sancheirib, but he was probably afraid of him. Yet, when Chizkiyahu got sick and was healed, this is a nice opportune time. There's nothing wrong with greeting Chizkiyahu, you know. A big miracle happened, the sun was held up. So he sends a greeting, and we have on this a very interesting story over here in Sanhedrin. What up is that? The four steps. Okay. That's how you have Amad Aleph. Vayisei shalach merodach baladan ben baladan melech babel svam shem kichol lachizkiyo vayachzak. Because he got sick and is healed. So for that he sends him greetings. Lidrosh is amof as a sheba oretz. Because of the miracle, the sun reversed and he saw the miracle. So it says in the Medrash that he used to sleep or take a nap and wake up in the mid-afternoon, and the next night he wakes up, he sees the sun is in the east. In the morning he thought that his servants let him sleep all night. He got furious and wanted to kill him. They told him, no, this is a miracle, you know, the sun went backwards. He says, who is this? Chizkiyahu. He says, Cholesh Be'itbach. Omar says, Iko Gavri Gihai, there's such a person, and I don't need to, and I shouldn't send them greetings. Kosvulei, they wrote greetings. Shalom Malcha Chizkiyahu. Shalom lekarta du shlem, shalom alakora. Greetings to Chizkiyahu, greetings to Yerushalayim, and greetings to the great Hashem. The Nebuchadnezzar suffered in Baladan. The Nebuchadnezzar was the sofer, the scribe Baladan. He wasn't there then. Geata Amalu told him, Hechikasmi, he said, what did you write? He told him, Hechikasmina. Amalu says, Kurisulay alakorabi. He called him the great God. Because Kurisulay himself, and you write that at the end? Amar Lahachik Sofi, he should have said Shalom Karabah, Shalom Kadosh, Shalom Malka Chizkiyahu. He should have been the first. So they told him, you said it, you run after him. And he ran, he took three steps or four steps, different gersa, and the Malach went and stopped him, and which is the reason why we take three steps when we finish one Esrei, because he was Zorcha. He got the power to destroy the Beis HaMikdash because he took three steps. And that's why we when we daven Shebanim Beis HaMikdash, we have a minute, we take three steps, that we should be Zorcha to see building Beis HaMikdash. So, could be that this purpose of greening by Merodach Baladon was not really so much because he wanted to greet the Ribbono Shelo. And that's why he didn't put the Ribbono Shelo first. His main thing was greeting Chizkiyahu. Why is he greeting Chizkiyahu? Because Chizkiyahu just defeated his bitter enemy Sennacherib. That's why he's greeting him. He's disguising it a little. Okay, he got sick and whatever, but the real reason is because he's a bitter enemy of Sennacherib. That's the reason. And that's how he sends the greeting. And when these messengers come to Chizkiyahu, they don't just say, oh, here is a beautiful present. They're not just sitting over there. They're sitting down and they're negotiating a treaty between Chizkiyahu and Merodach Baladon. A treaty between them. In other words, if you'll attack one, the other one will assist him or whatever, a military treaty. And that's what it seems from Josephus also. It wasn't just greetings, like the other kings sent greetings to Chizkiyahu, and that was wonderful. Okay, they got one line over there in their Rayyama. But Merodach Baladon, this was a treaty that Chizkiyahu made with Melech Bavel. And that was the terrible thing that he did. That was the thing why Hashem got angry. Why the curse? If we compare it to a little later history, we have a very similar story in Ba'isheni, when the Hashmonaim made a treaty with the Romans to fight the Greeks. And what happened in the end? The treaty with the Romans was what led to Churban Beis HaMikdash. I think the Ramban talks about it. So that was what's happening over here is a treaty between Chizkiyahu and Merodach Baladon. And that was the terrible thing that because of that came Yishayahu and told him, and came Yishayahu and told him the terrible thing that's going to happen. The fascinating story of Sennacherib. We have his accounts on this campaign to Eretz Yisrael. And we mentioned the first half. He comes to El Tekeh, which is in the Shefelah, in the lowlands. And then he talks about how Chizkiyahu, as the Chizkiyahu did not submit to my, the Jew, who did not submit to my yoke, I surrounded him in his royal residence like a bird in a cage. And he talks about how he took all his countries and he cut them off and he gave it to this and gave it to that, and he surrounded him with earthwork and whatnot. But he doesn't talk about capturing Yerushalayim. So he's not going to say that his whole army was wiped out. Don't expect him to write that. He's going to turn a victory into a defeat into victory. But he can't lie. And he does two things over here. First of all, he mentions what he did accomplish. And he actually wreaked havoc on Eretz Yisrael. 46, Al-Arab Turis, where he's the same, he captured the walled cities. As we said, he talks about 46 walled cities that he captured. He talks about countless amount of open villages that he captured. He talks about 201,000 people taken captive and carried out of Eretz Yisrael. Which was the policy for Allah Sancher Mel Khashur or Bilbelas Kolaumos. It wasn't just Sancher, it had begun already with Tiglat Pileser and other kings, Sargon, but it continued and it probably continued even after Sancher, because in Sefer Ezra it talks about the Shomronim who caused trouble for the Jews, and over there it says we're in Ezra Dalid. Vayishmu Tzar Yehuda Binyamin, and those troublemakers came, and who are the Shomronim, and they say, we want to build a Beis HaMikdash with you, because we worship the same God. And we are actually worshiping this God from the days of, we're here, who brought us here? Esar Chadon. Esar Chadon was the successor of Sancheriv, his son. So it didn't end with Sancheriv, but Sancheriv actually brought it to high levels, as he himself says. So it talks about this thing. It talks about this massive campaign in which he exiled, but Yerushalayim he didn't capture. Another very fascinating thing is that when he went back to Nineveh, and as I said, he didn't die right away. He lived for another 20 years. He wasn't assassinated right away. And in Nineveh, he built himself a palace. A massive palace, which was excavated by the British archaeologist Henry Austin Layard in the middle of the 19th century. And these Assyrian palaces were decorated with reliefs carved into soft rock, into gypsum, which show how great the Assyrian king was. And one of the central rooms in the main room wing of the palace was Sancheriv's victory over Lachish. Now, Lachish was not even a capital city. We know we're talking about Lachish because it says it on the inscription. Lachish was not even a capital city. But since he didn't capture Shalim, he had to put Lachish over there. And he shows the whole preparations for this war, how he means the army, the archers, those with the bows, the tanks in those days, which were the battering rams, and how he assaults the city of Lachish, and how he takes down the walls, and how he captures the city, and he takes the prisoners, and those who are suspected of being perpetuators of the revolt were killed or tortured to death, and the rest were just taken into exile. And then you see Sancheriv sitting over there on his throne, and how all the stuff, all the spoils are being paraded in front of him. Lachish, as I said, Lachish is the same city that appears in Tanakh, so we know that that's where he went to war. Excavations in Lachish actually uncovered the ramp that the Assyrians had built in order to assault the city. So it's fascinating how to compare. It's clear that the person who drew the sketch was there in Lachish, had seen the battle, and it's a really fascinating thing to actually see how Chizkiyahu talks, how Sancheriv talks about his version of the story, how his victories he mentions, but those that he lost he didn't mention, but he can't really write a blatant lie over there. So he twists the truth a little in that direction. Where did the Assyrians camp? Where did they camp outside Yerushalayim? So they definitely did come. Well, that's where the miracle happened. That's where the miracle happened. Josephus does talk about. Josephus does talk about a place that was called the Assyrian camp. And it's somewhere in the vicinity of Shar Shechem of today. North of Yerushalayim is where the Assyrians camped. What do we have in Tanakh? What's the reference? Vayishlach Melech Ashur, we're back in Perek Yudches Melachim Beis. Tartan Rav Sudan Shekeim Min Lachish Yerushalayim. Vayalu Vayavo Yerushalayim Vayalu Vayavo Vayamdu B'Salas Habrecho HaLiona Hashem M'Silas Deichoves. They stood B'Salas Habrecho HaLiona. A ta'ala is a canal, and a brecha is a pool. So now we're talking over here about a pool and a canal. And Radak and others explain that there's a pool with a dam, and there's a little shaft, a little hole in this dam, which you can open up as high as you want in order to control the flow of water into the canal. And that was actually found in excavations just north of Shar HaAriyot in Yerushalayim. A massive dam, 8 meters thick, and in it, 2 holes, which enable the water to flow from that. And in my opinion, that's definitely the place that is the Ta'os HaBrech HaAliyona, and which would make sense, you know, if they needed water or whatever, that is the place where the Assyrians camped. What else did we leave out yet? Did we cover everything? Okay. So, yes, the question we asked is why does the story end with Sancheriv being assassinated? when the assassination of Sancheriv seemingly did not have anything to do with the whole story. It happened 20 years later. But the truth is that if you go through the rest of the records of the Assyrian of Sancheriv, you see that from then on, Sancheriv actually never went on any major campaigns. All his predecessors, they expanded the boundaries of the Assyrian Empire. Sancheriv, after this, a couple skirmishes over here. He fought against the Babylonians nearby, but he didn't really expand the boundaries of the empire. In other words, he was, after this, he was a totally different man. His son, Esarhaddon, not only expanded the boundaries, but even captured Egypt, which was something that until then no country had been able to do, to come from Asia and capture Egypt and cross the Sinai Desert. And his son, Esarhaddon, was able to do that. So Sancheriv's death could be tied in somewhat to the fact that the people just were not happy with the way that he was ruling, and this is not the empire that they were used to. It's interesting, it says that he was assassinated by two sons. Adar Melech Vesaretzer Bonov Hikov Becheref. They went into Eretz Ararat. They escaped to Ararat, which is in Turkey, northern Turkey today, by Lake Van. To Ararat was also a country that was at war with Sancheriv. So that was probably a safe place where they can escape to, and they won't give them over back to the Assyrians. In those days, countries that had treaties, that was one of the things, handing over prisoners. It's not a new invention of modern times. In those days also, we have the Hittite and Egyptian treaties, where they talk about handing over people who run away, etc. One of the things we see over here in Melach Meshites, Mishayo says about Sancheriv, as Michir after Begidavta, who have you spoken against? Well, me are Mosakol. Who have you speaking against? Ribono Shalom. Biad Malachecha after Hashem Vatomer. You blasphemize Hashem and says, Ani Elisi Merom Harim. I went up to high mountains, Yarkase Levonon, to the foothills of Lebanon. Ve'echos Komas Arazov, and I chopped down these cedar trees. Mivcha Broshov, the select pine trees. Vavo Melon Kito Yarkamilo. So he talks about his conquests in Lebanon. Now these are common motifs. We don't have this about Sancheriv, but these are common motifs in Assyrian writings. When they captured Lebanon, if I talk about a little earlier king, Shalmaneser, he talks about, I ascended the mountains of Amanos. Amanos is Lebanon. Turei Amnon, right? Amanos is Lebanon. I cut their cedar and pine timber. And they all talk about capturing Lebanon and cutting down cedar trees and pine timber from Lebanon. So this is a typical, rhetoric of the Assyrian kings, is that they were able to climb up to high mountains. Sancheriv himself talks about going up a mountain, a steep mountain, which he rode on a horse, and if it was too steep, he says, I ran up on fours, you know, and I captured the thing, and I captured it. So these things over here are clearly the style of the Assyrian kings. The way they have it, we see that here. Anything else we left out? Let's see. Okay, yes, we have this is not Megay for Sanhedrin, but we'll talk about it anyway because I think it's important and I think it's true. We have this Gemara Sachim. This also has to do with the preparations that Hizkiyo did for this war with Sancheriv. So we have over here in the end of the fourth parak of Sachem. Shisha Dvarim Sachem Nen Vav Amin Alef. Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiya Amelch. Chizkiya Amelch did six things. Ashlosha Hodu Lo, three things Chachamim agreed with him. Ashlosha Lo Hodu Lo. He cut down the gates of the Hechol and sent him to the king of Ashur. They didn't agree with him. He sealed the upper waters of the Gihon and they did not they weren't molded to him. And Chazal and Rashi says, "Kidechsev," it says, "Laman lo yavo malch Ashur v'yim tumayim lishtos," that the kings of Ashur should not come and find out. So what of Lahor lo Ashur l'vdach b'kodesh Baruch Hu? Hashem promised him that the city will be saved. Now, even if Hashem promised him, should he do ishtalos or not? That's an interesting question. Kishal atzmai. If we look in Divrei Hayomim, so we see a very interesting thing. By the way, in Hashanah Rabbah, one of the tefillos we talk about Chizkiyahu, Oz b'vay mecharef sasam einu ismayim. When the mecharef, the megadef, the mecharef came, he sealed the springs of water. He closed them. So is that a mila or is that a chisara? If that's wrong, why would we mention that? Why would we mention that he did that? So indeed, there's one kirsa that they were moded to him on the fact that sasa megichon ha'aliyah. If we look in Divrei Hayomim, where it goes into more detail, and when Chizkiyahu realized that Sancheriv is actually going to come, and he's going to have to face it. He took counsel with his ministers and generals to close, to seal the springs which are outside the city. They assisted him. The people gathered. They sealed all the springs. And the Nachal, which was flowing in the land, why should the kings of Ashur come and they'll have water to drink? Then they'll sit over here, they'll have an easy job. If we prevent them, they won't have water to drink, then they'll have a tough time. And we know this also, of course, in those days, bringing water was not simple. If you had rivers flowing, you had water to drink. If you didn't, it was much more complex thing. So we have this story over here. Yet, it doesn't mention anything about the Gichon. Where does it mention that was in Perek Lamed Beis? Where does it mention about the Gichon? When it sums up, when it sums up his life at the end of Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed, V'yichizkiyahu sasa mesmotzame migichon elyon, he sealed off the entrance of the upper Gichon, v'Hashem lematzam harav l'ir David, and he brought the water into Ir David, v'yitzlach chizkiyahu b'chol maaseh. So in other words, it doesn't even mention this, when it talks about that he sealed all the springs shut, it doesn't mention the fact that he did this project of sealing the water of the Gichon and bringing the water into the city. It doesn't mention that. And likewise, if we look in Sefer Melachim, where it actually sums up Chizkiyahu's life, Perek Melachim Beis, Perek Chof, in the end of the Perek, V'yaseh divrei Chizkiyahu b'chol gvuroso, and the rest of his deeds, the fact that he made the pool and the toll on the canal, and he brought the water into the city, they are written in the chronicles of Malchi Yehuda. So in other words, nothing to do with this war effect against Sancheriv. The war effect against Sancheriv, he sealed the waters shut, which was a necessity. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that this major project, which we'll talk about in a moment, was done after Sancheriv's defeat. And this major project was not a thing that could be done, you know, one day next. And that was, of course, the famous Chizkiyahu's tunnel, which is today in Yerushalayim. There's two stages. There's one stage where Chizkiyahu has to secure the water supply of Yerushalayim. But that was probably connected to Warren Shaft. And that was something that was done quickly and just barely enough to withstand the siege. But after Sancheriv was defeated and Sancheriv left and Chizkiyahu lives another 15 years, that's when he took himself the next project, and that is the famous Chizkiyahu's tunnel. Now this project is an amazing project on any scale that you look at it. Everyone who was in Yerushalayim knows, of course, what we're talking about. It's that famous Chizkiyahu's tunnel. It's a tunnel running through solid rock, over half a kilometer long. We have the text of the Shiloh inscription. Maybe in the Ariel. And the interesting thing is that in the 1880s, when this tunnel was rediscovered, they actually found the description of the final moments of the dig. The one thing missing from this inscription is the name of the king and the year. Everyone pretty much agrees that that definitely was Chizkiyahu's project, even though it doesn't say, but the year would be crucial over here also. And a normal king would put the year also, but he doesn't even put his name, let alone the year. So we don't have an answer to that. But what's special about this project is you have to realize that in those times already, the technique of making water tunnels and bringing water into the city existed. Chizkiyahu didn't invent that. Yet, all the tunnels that were dug from both ends, but were also dug with shafts from the top. So every small section, every, you know, few hundred meters, there's a shaft where all the dirt was taken out. The difference is that over here, where it's dug through solid rock in Yerushalayim, there are no shafts along the way. It's all from both ends, which meant that you had to take the dirt, the rock, the dust, you can imagine, dark and dust, and schlep it all by a bucket brigade to take it all the way out. That's something that's unprecedented in old times. I'm not talking about modern times, but I'm saying it was just an amazing thing. And the fact that they actually dug this thing from two ends and met in the middle. And we know this, A, from the inscription, which describes the last couple seconds, the last couple, I would say, hours of the dig. And you can imagine that I think that was the biggest concern. We've been digging now for months now. Will we meet finally or not? And we also know this because anyone who walks there can actually see the direction of the dig. And you can see which way it's dug, and you can see how they actually dug from both ends, and somehow they met in the middle. It's not straight at all, at least not in the section where they're about to meet. And it's still a mystery. There are a bunch of theories exactly how this worked. We don't have any good, solid answers that answer all the questions. But as they're nearing, you know, some want to say that there was a crack in the rock and they just followed the crack, but they won't explain why at the meeting points there's a whole bunch of zigzags and a couple false starts, and they we don't know. But anyway, this amazing project, which gets its own pasuk in and when it sums up Chizkiyahu's life, his most amazing project is Vasher Asas Abrecha Vesatala. That which he made the pool, and that which he made the canal, and he brought the water into the city. And that was that tops, you could say, tops everything that Chizkiyahu did, this amazing engineering project that he actually did. And again, so it could be that lo hodu lo, because at the time of the war, he really had no choice. But after that already was unnecessary. This project was unnecessary, and that's why Hazal didn't agree with him. It could be he dried up the land or something like that. It could be that's the reason. But anyway, it's pretty clear from the Pesukim that this Chizkiyahu's tunnel happened after the story of Sennacherib, not before. So if we sum it up, this is a fascinating, the Assyrian period is a fascinating period, which we can do a lot more research because we have not only the Jewish sources, but we have a lot of the Assyrian records as well, and we can compare actually the records. And this classic example of Sennacherib versus Chizkiyahu is where we can see the way Sennacherib reported his reports, the way the Tanakh reports its report, the way the archaeological stuff, how it fits in so perfectly. And we'll show even that the drushas of Chazal, of Shulchan Yisrael Mumar and others actually I fit them, actually have the sources in the book.